Okay, I think we got us. I am excited to have the conversation today, not only because it's one of my favorite topics, smart buildings, but because there's a real story here. And it's easy to say smart buildings and kind of evangelize or pontificate or kind of think about what they could be. It's really interesting when you go back 5, 10, 15 years and talk about with the people that are really getting this done. But before I bring on our guests or open up the segment, I do want to acknowledge what's going on in Afghanistan. It would be remiss of us not to. There is so much heartbreak going on right now, and I know it is a terrible situation, but our thoughts and our prayers are going out to everybody in harm's way, and we can only hope and pray that those who need to get out safely. So with that, this week's episode, so the journey begins. We at RealCom, IBCon, really started talking about buildings in 2002. And the early conversations were really about integrating IT with building systems to create this new generation. So we started, we were talking about a lot of theory, and we weren't getting much headway in the United States, frankly. This was probably around the 2002 timeframe. 2004, we go to Asia and we just get blown away with what they're doing with smart buildings. We come back and we start saying, come on, we got to get going. We got to get moving on this topic. And there were some early adopters. I think of Paul Quinn and I think of Matt Spathis. And they were smaller, good-sized real estate companies, but smaller. And, you know, we're looking for those case studies. And then one day, this guy named Larry Melton walks into RealCom. And with that, if you could bring all the guests in, Nancy, Frank, Larry, and Howard, the conversation goes that we literally see Larry Melton walk into the exhibit hall, and he says, I'm a facilities guy, and I really don't know where I'm at. And we're going to have Howard join us in the conversation today because he was such an integral part of this. So with that, Larry, my friend, tell us what the heck happened that day, or actually start with why you even came to the conference. I think that's worth telling. We got Larry on mute. I can't hear him.
There we go.
There we go.
Now we got him. There we go.
Now we got him.
So, Jim, you nailed it. I walked into a conference and I said, I think I'm at the wrong conference. I was the lone facilities guy at a CIO, what felt like a CIO's conference. And I think I mentioned it to Howard when I introduced myself. And they said, hold on. And during break, next thing I know, you had me on stage being interviewed. amongst the masses. But how we got there, it was actually an unbelievable time in our government and in the industry, I think, both for you all. But for us, back then, GSA 2008 in Chicago, we got to go to that conference on the heels of a friend saying, you know, there's this conference going on and a bunch of innovative people are doing some stuff with smart buildings. Maybe you should go there and see what the story is. And I went, and all we had at that point was a study that showed that we had endorsed at GSA that was endorsed by Lawrence Berkeley National Labs. Mm-hmm. And it was the foundation to the of smart buildings. Right. And we used that as the impetus to say, yeah, maybe there's something here. Maybe there's savings. Maybe there's a big picture approach to what we need to do. And absent of a few conversations there at the conference, I said, oh my gosh, I'm in the right place. Fast forwarding over a few days, I was in the right place. I think, oh my gosh, can you imagine if I even knew more going into that situation, how fast we could have gone. But the warp speed we went to at that point and the excitement that came from that.
Hold on one second. Don't go there yet. I'm going to just take it over to Howard. Howard, you got this facilities guy who thinks he's in the right place, but is not sure. He's at a real estate IT conference. Give us a little, what'd you do with them? Who'd you introduce them to?
Well, set the stage. It says it's 2009. This is the Chicago Regency Hyatt on Lakeshore. We're down in the basement. It was, if you recall, it was kind of a smaller conference than typical because of the, you know, we were recession. And I see Larry walk in and he's suited up. He's looking, I can tell he's there with a purpose, but still a little, trying to figure out if he's in the right place. So we introduced each other and I got right off that, you know, they're seriously involved in trying to put together a strategy. He wasn't asking simple tactical questions. He, you know, I could hone right in that this was, you know, he's looking for strategic guidance. So, you know, I just thought of the top five people that if I, you know, have to, if I could leave him with something, there were five serious connections that I thought that we had to make. And
Well, and what was really interesting, Larry, I don't know, and Frank, if you knew this, but we were getting a little, I don't want to say tired, but, you know, we've been pushing the same two or three case studies for 2-3 years now, and everybody's saying, okay, well, let's get some. And it was really GSA and Microsoft, Daryl Smith, that came at the exact right time. I called them the cavalry, meaning you brought a whole new burst of energy at scale. You took the whole conversation to another level because of the size and the credibility of your organizations. And had it not been for you, GSA and Microsoft, that smart building conversation would have really stalled, in my opinion. So now you and Frank, tell us a little bit about the Fast 50. That was the first project.
And Jim, before I go there was one motivating factor. You said to me at that conference on stage in front of all those CIOs, you said, well, Larry, you know, the reality is that all of the facilities people are going to be working for the CIOs one day. And I said, not true, because we're going to run this facility. We're going to run this smart buildings program at GSA PBS. We were committed at that point that facilities management was going to own it. And the number one component was that organizational alignment piece, which is where we should go with the Fast 50 now. So, right. Yes.
Wait, pause. That's a real quick little phrase, organizational alignment. It's always misused, goes right over everybody's head. But as we're going to talk about a little bit, it is the most important phrase in this whole conversation.
Can I just step back before you get into organizational alignment? Let's also look at, Howard, you said 2008, 2009, the economy was tanking. We were moving into a recession. Right. And the opportunity that came to us was the stimulus program. Right. And they flooded government with, you know, billions of dollars. Right. To get the economy going. And that was our opportunity, because GSA got a sizable hunk of money. I think it was about $5.5 billion. And we were going to green buildings and make them sustainable. And what we said, well, if we're going to do that, you know, across our portfolio, let's take advantage of this smart buildings concept. And so that's how the resources came into the opportunity.
That's a good point. Yeah. So can you guys frame up what the Fast 50 was for the audience?
Yeah, Frank, I'll start and then I'll hand off to you. We, on the heels of the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab study, we had the business case in hand. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in Washington, you still, and Frank, you nailed it. It was the Recovery Act money came in, but it didn't mean it was a free ticket to go spend. We had to make an investment. We had to make the business case, and we did so. Our target for the Fast 50, if you all recall, were 80% of our buildings were consuming 20% of our energy in the GSA. And that became what we called our public enemy number one. We had to target those buildings for energy efficiency. It became our top priority. And the question was, okay, within that 20%, how are we going to go target those buildings and prioritize them? And that was really one of our biggest obstacles of how do we prioritize which ones first, and how do we do this on a national scale? The challenge then at that point, we were getting a lot of industry pushback saying, there's no way, you don't understand. You can't just go connect a bunch of buildings and be done in 12 months, see the operating cost savings and declare victory in 24 months. At that moment, even though, I left RealCom, we came back, we had a business case, and we thought, oh, we have this prioritization and we have a strategy to go. The biggest fear I had at that point of the Fast 50 was, this is a much longer project than I thought. That was my number one epiphany when I left Chicago. And coming back to making the business case to say, we had to get everybody on board that this was a change management component more than anything. And we had to get that, and I know we'll talk about organizational alignment a little bit later, but in the component of making it successful for the Fast 50, we had to partner with the CIO, the construction group, and facilities, and we had to be lock, stock, and barrel to make sure that we were singing from the same sheet of music, because you just can't do it on a national scale to that level. So let me just,
where did Europe, you were obviously seminal in that decision to move an entire organization like GSA. Was it a slow epiphany? Was it instantaneous? Where did you say, things got to change.
I knew that at that point, you know, at that point at GSA, we were 11 regions on a national level, plus a headquarters, 11 different facilities management organizations managing a portfolio of 360 million square feet, you know, between owned and leased. You just, the writing was on the wall. You just had to bring the ship, right to ship, to have a strategy on a national platform. Our national strategy at that point was lackluster. That's what was our pain point going forward. We said we can have a smart building strategy, but how do we do it on a national scale when you have 11 different organizations, regions really, who had different needs? And let's be real, the north, the south, the east, the west, wherever the buildings were, there was obstacles with every single geographic region that we were facing and challenges within those portfolios that were very unique to those 11 regions.
Now, Frank, you were one of those regions, if I remember. Yeah. So what you, now you're, Larry's coming in with these ideas. You're one of those regions. How did you react to all this?
Well, you know, again, you hunker down, you know, and say, not in my region kind of thing, but you know, you had to see the benefit. Yeah. And there was another piece of this, and Larry will remember this, and what we saw in the environment was BAS systems, the strategies were being driven by the manufacturers, and it was going to happen to us irregardless. Public ISPs were making connections into our buildings, right? The BAS systems, whether they were open or closed, were happening in our buildings. And we just said, rather than let the industry dictate to us, why don't we turn it around and see if we can drive a strategy that, you know, is on our terms and not industry 100%. We had to work with industry. Don't get me wrong. We had to work with the players, the Honeywells, the Siemens, the Johnsons, and all of them. But again, what we were concerned with was also the security aspect, right?
That early on, you were on top of that. Right.
Early on. And, you know, and that's where IT comes in, right? And the organization alignment. And then our builders, right? And building secure networks in our buildings that all the data can ride on. So, you know, from a regional perspective, you know, we saw the benefit that if we knew how our buildings operated through data, we could react to it, right? And that could save money, that could save energy. So that's where
we are. Larry, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The business case for that too is foundational. Where we made the business case for the Fast 50, leveraging the building automation approach and those issues that we were facing from the industry anyway, was really around the CMMS too, our computer maintenance management system at the national level. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest problems we had was that we had 11 regions, 11 different ways running CMMS systems, and not all of them were on the same platform. We made a strategic decision on a national level. We said we will cut our IT budget on our CMMS, rally the troops, and have a focus to a national CMMS platform to show the commitment that we will start with our own house, and then we will drive.
Okay, so that has nothing, that has very little to do with technology, because there's probably five platforms that can deliver. That is absolutely organizational alignment, okay? So what do you say to major facility executives, your peers, about the idea of bringing in IT and other organizations, construction you had mentioned, to look at this holistically? What do you say in 30 to 45 seconds to your peers about what it's going to take to really bring buildings into the 21st century?
Well, our challenge was at that point, look, our CIO, we were spending money that the CIO needed to have some sort of controls on, and we didn't. We were not collaborating with them. And in a typical construction and facilities world, what do facilities folks do? We blame the construction people for everything they build, and it's not built right, but we have to operate it. So when we sit down and we say, okay, well, let's stop the bantering, we're always going to have the differentiators of not aligning ourselves. We said, we're going to stop doing that. We're going to start making decisions together. That was the foundation to the commitment to the Fast 50 going forward. Let's align together. Let's commit, us too. Look, the facilities people, you know, the fingers were pointed at us, say, you know, if you just operated the way we designed it, everything would be fine. We said, all right, look, we hear you, but can we all make decisions together on how we design our buildings and how we're going to operate them going forward? Let's have some standard operating procedures. Let's have some commitments that we will do the following. And that's what we did. We built a charter. We gave a charter, and you know, I'd say, you know, thank God for my colleagues back then. I'll give a shout out to Phil Klokas and Bill Guerin, both who were assistant commissioners. We wouldn't have, if we didn't have a commitment from them and Casey Coleman, who was the CIO of GSA,
I remember.
We would not have been able to commit, because they committed in as much as Frank and I committed and took the path forward, we would not have been successful without their commitment from a leadership standpoint.
I think there was a meeting, if I remember, you and Phil were sitting next to each other, and I pointed to the two of you, and I said, until you guys and ladies in the room get to that point where you're sitting hand in hand, facilities and IT, you're never going to accomplish anything. I kind of remember that meeting. We got to take a quick break here from one of our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to finish on GSA Today real quick, and I want to get right into where the building people are and what their vision and their innovative projects that they're working on right now. So we'll be right back. All right, let's bring everybody back and continue our conversation. There we go. All right, so I want to spend just a couple minutes on GSA Today, and I actually want Howard, if you could join as well, because I know you're working daily with Chip and the other folks at GSA. 30 seconds, 45 seconds. We'll start with Frank. What's GSA doing today? Are they keeping pace with the innovation you guys set up, and where do you think they're going?
Yeah, no, Jim, great question. And, you know, and we've had some discussions with Chip over the Chip Pierpont, who runs the program, and Anna Rawson now. And, you know, they're going full steam. You know, when after the Fast 50, there was a slight little pause, but as Larry said, 20% of the 1,500 owned buildings represent 80% of the energy spent, which is about 200 buildings. And they're up to 115 buildings, as I understand right now, that are connected, dialed in, bringing information into a fault detection diagnostics engine, and providing the operators with information that keep their buildings optimized, right? That was the foundation of the business case, you know. Then there was part two, which we're starting to see start uncover, and that's the, how do I use that data from a portfolio operation, right? So now, not just the GSA, but Department of Defense, we're starting to see agencies that are building their geographic operational centers where all that data is coming in now, and they're using that data to, whether they do truck rolls, trending patterns, you know, for solving, being predictive maintenance and pattern kind of visions to solve the problems even before they become a problem, right? So taking the, hey, you're simultaneously heating and cooling, right? That to something greater and more valuable, right? So we kind of call it the smart buildings 2.0, where you now take that information and drive it into knowledge and wisdom.
So Larry, it's always a concern on major, you know, paradigm shift projects that when the original team of people that founded it, when they leave, it goes the wrong way. What I'm hearing from Frank is quite opposite. You're seeing the trajectory continue as well?
Yeah, and I know that I can't speak officially for GSA, but I'll tell you, I echo what Frank's saying. I'm pretty proud of what GSA is doing. You know, when you look at where they started, and yeah, you always hit ups and downs and lulls in projects, but the reality is they've stayed true to what the commitment is, and it has to happen, because let's be real. I said it then, and I'll say it now. Smart buildings was going to happen to people whether you liked it or not. So either embrace it, adopt it, and build around it and design for it, or you're going to be passed up and the industry will just connect without you.
Right. And then Howard, you deal with Chip and the GSA team on a daily basis, regular basis. What's your vantage point?
I just think they've moved with, they've moved forcefully forward. Really the progress on this project going from the original Fast 50 to where they are, I think it's 115 buildings they have now. That is massive, but what you don't see is the standards behind it, the organizational alignment that had to be done, the FedRamping, all of the supply chain, making sure that there are compliance and there's governance over everything from cyber to that whole supply chain management. I just think they've done a phenomenal job. Chip and Anna have, what a great team.
Well, it's one thing to innovate on one or two buildings, which is still hard, by the way, but to innovate at the scale of GSA for as long as they've been doing it, I'll end the conversation, or at least this part of the conversation with, you were the cavalry that came in way back then for us, you know, and for the whole conversation. And it looks like the Cavalry is continuing to do a great job. So that's very cool. So we only have about 4 minutes left. So I want to pivot to your new company. It's not new anymore.
Yeah.
Can you give us a quick update on what you took from GSA to create the Building People, you know, a little history?
Yeah, and I think the biggest lesson learned, if we knew then, when we knew now, I think Frank and I would have probably focused a lot around the people component earlier on in the smart building phase. And I think as we transitioned and the Building People, geez, I can't believe I'm going to say this because now I feel like we're getting old, Jim, but 8.5 years later, we are. Yeah, that's true. 8.5 years later, yeah, here we are, the Building People. And we've always focused on integrating technology, buildings, and people through our thought leadership, right? That was our passion. We always said we want, for us, it's about hiring credibility and transforming the smart buildings environment. We've always wanted to do that. That's never changed from day one. You obviously, you have to get customers to adapt, embrace, and want to do it. But, you know, from the technology standpoint, we're always integrating and automating. From the building standpoint, we're always, you know, operating and adapting to that build environment. But on the people piece, it's about optimizing the workforce experience. And we're realizing really the people component truly does come first. Again, just in hindsight, I wish we would have done that earlier. As an earlier adopter, has gotten more people on board in that organizational alignment strategy. But today, that's what we do as a service. We did pivot our business a little bit more and put even more emphasis around the people component, whether it's from hiring or building the strategy for our customers. We had to put some emphasis around that to build our credibility to make the change.
So you know, I think it's pretty safe to say I'm one of the biggest proponents of innovation. But over the last 3, 4, 5 years, 6 years, we've been getting so much money thrown into this industry. And I've seen deck after deck after deck. We got the greatest new widget. We're going to change the business in 24 months. Give me $20 million. What do you say to those people?
Well, first of all, I think if you expect us to come in and build a smart buildings in 12 months and get you those savings overnight, then anyone who tells you that has not been in this business to understand the dynamic and the complexity around it. Look, I think, again, I think I could say this. I think if GSA team right now looked back, and as we do, we would all say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that, you know, why so little, why so slow? There's a lot of challenges that come with this. There's a lot of adoption. The change management component is the piece that I think is slowing the market down the most for all of us. It's not, look, we've got plenty of, I don't want to be dismissive, but there's a lot of smart people in the facilities and technology world that connect buildings with their eyes closed. All of us are really smart and we know what to put in the building. It's the adaption to that change. If you can't get the community to adapt, then nothing's gonna happen, you know?
Right. Yeah, and we've talked for years on the idea that, in my opinion, the strategy is simple. Right size the portfolio, 35% utilization, get the real estate to the right size. Number two, use it to understand the data, use it to understand every aspect of the tenants and the energy consumption. Look at that as a breathing entity that produces information every second that can help you manage it better. And then third, apply the technologies to that building that allow it to run better, more efficient, more safe. But to your point, take into consideration the people in those buildings. You know, why are you doing this? It's not just the back end stuff, it's the front end stuff as well. And I think a lot of people miss that. So yeah. From Frank, any final thoughts? We're gonna run out of time here quickly. What would you say to your peers?
No, I would just say, as Larry said, you know, I remember sitting in the room when we were kind of designing this and whiteboarding it. And, you know, we had technology and we had buildings, right? We said, we have the technology, we have the buildings, we can make it happen. And then there was a smarter person than me in the room, and actually was an engineer, who said, yep, we can do this. And the IT guy said, yep, we can do this. But if you don't get your people to change, it's not going to be a success. And that's where that people kind of pillar came into it. You know, and I remember when we rolled out S50 with the help of our support contractors, we spent months engaging the operators at the building, right? And training and understanding the data and the faults and the rules and tailoring it to their buildings that those operators really needed to be on board also.
Yeah. So Howard, you are the one who walked Larry around that conference in 2009. Any final thoughts on these two great guys?
No, I mean, just being associated with this journey with Larry and Frank and the whole team has been, you know, just a tremendous honor, you know, in my career to be associated and actually and watch this. It's, in my opinion, one of the most epic
smart building initiatives and journeys I've seen yet.
Absolutely. So Larry, final word is yours. What do you say, past, current, future?
Just, you know, we got to keep at it, right? Like anything, and I think, Jim, you've been around here, I think we joke 30-some plus years, right? You've been doing this. The reality is there's days where it's really slow. There's days you bang your head against the wall, but we got to keep at it. You know, smart buildings is happening to us whether we like it or not. You know, smart buildings won't put anyone in a job. I always said it then, but not knowing smart buildings and not implementing it will certainly put you out of a job. Adopt it, embrace it, and focus on the people.
Yep. Well, and to kind of wrap this whole conversation into a neat bow, you had said earlier, you know, you first thought it was 12 months and, you know, maybe 24 and ambitious goals. But my observation after all these years is there is zero, no destination. This is a journey that when you're done with the first phase, you start the second. It's like saying, I'm going to, you know, build the building and never paint it again, or I'm going to build the building and never, you know, clean the floors again. Buildings change more. Their uses change more. Once you embrace a new innovative way to approach that building, it's a lifelong journey. It's not 12 months. It's not 12 months. So guys, thank you so much, not just for being here today, but for the tireless efforts that you have shown over the years and the energy you still have for this business. And I hope anybody and everybody watching takes lesson from the guys who were there when nobody else was.
On behalf of all of us, I mean, appreciate it. Thanks for coming back to us. It means a lot to us as a small business. It's trying to make it out there too. So thanks for the opportunity to give us and showcase our story. Appreciate it.
You're heroes in our eyes. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks guys. Great to see you.
Great to see you. All right. So with that, Howard, don't go anywhere because I'm going to hand it right to you, and you can take us into this week's news and then I'll come back at the end and wrap up the show.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jim. And thank you, Larry, Frank. Great having you guys with us. So each week, I highlight a couple of stories from our weekly news briefing. We release it Thursdays at 11 a.m. And as you know, we love smart buildings, as evidenced by our prior conversation. And over the years, we've developed some pretty high expectations. This week's lead story is on, I believe, one of the most technologically advanced high-rise office buildings in Austin, if not Texas, if not the U.S., it's River South. It's a 15-story building joint venture between Stream Realty and Quadrail, slated for completion end of 2021. And as for smarts, this River South project goes way beyond smart access control lighting and BMS. It's literally using tech to tailor the experience for each occupant with a focus on health, wellness, and comfort. And it addresses environmental impact in virtually every aspect of the design. It's got sensors that can literally track micro movements. It can measure breathing and heart rates of occupants in the building and predict if someone needs medical attention. From the building operation, that building operation network is a gigabit passive optical, a GPON, almost unheard of in multi-tenant buildings here in the US. The level of data and system integration are simply stunning. All tenant space is individually metered, how often you see that, so tenants can be billed in what they actually use, and they can continuously monitor and adjust their own consumption. This building can be completely touchless from parking garage to tenant desk with an app to call the elevator or to coffee reserve conference rooms and tables in the skylines. I'm only scratching the surface on this project that I believe is gonna be a new benchmark for smart buildings globally. And next up, shout out to this week's tech partner, RemLogix, for their article on the value of a well-architected CRM solution that's fully employed by needs to be fully employed by sales and leasing teams. And a couple of facts. 65% of organizations with mobile CRM achieve their sales quotas. CRM increases sales by up to 29%, productivity by 34%, and forecasting accuracy by 42%. Sales cycle shortened by 8 to 14%, and it pays back $8.71 for every dollar invested. And the numbers are better when CRM is really engineered to communicate with marketing and back office ERP systems. So in this article, Donnie Laws explains 5 important factors for a successful CRM implementation. Great article by RemLogix. Thanks, Donnie. Finally, Austin's in the news today, Austin-based Icon, founded in 2017. Now they started by creating single family homes for the homeless using 3D printing robotics. Their first was a 350 square foot house. Took about 48 hours to complete out of concrete. Since then, the startup has delivered more than 24 3D printed homes and structures across the U.S. and Mexico, and they just landed a $270 million Series B after seeing a 400% year-over-year increase in revenue growth. Now, their next-gen Vulcan construction system, that can 3D print homes and structures up to 3,000 square feet. It's 1.5 times larger, 2 times faster than the previous Vulcan 3D printers. Their list of future plans includes delivery of social disaster relief, more mainstream housing. But in addition, they're working with NASA to develop construction systems to create habitats on the moon and eventually Mars. So to me, it looks like people are really starting to want 3D printed homes, but although large scale production, I think is still gonna be a bit of a challenge. And we'll keep an eye on this space. Yeah. So with that, I'm out of time. Much more in our
great week. Job. Great job. Well, I got to say that was fun with those guys and great job on the news, Howard. So thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. So that wraps today's episode. And I got to say, you know, from my perspective, what it's taught me is, you know, when you choose a career or you get your first job, I know what you're really trying to do is maximize your income. But I think finding something that you like and you're passionate about is equally, if not more important. The relationships that I've got going back now are 5, 10, 15, 20, and in some cases 30 years. And people like Larry and Frank exemplify what passion does. I have not had one job. I have had a career with great people who are passionate about making the world better, making buildings better, more efficient, more technically advanced. And frankly, it's the community that gets this done. The technology is important, but like Larry said, it's the people. So next week, we got another great conversation. We're going to start bringing in some folks. We're going to be running some of the pre-con events and other sessions at RealCom and IBCon this November. So we're going to start with the Smart Building Integrator Summit, and we couldn't do it with any better folks. Craig Stevenson from the Oros Group, Donnie Walker, Newcomb & Boyd, and Scott Cochran from Cochran Supply. Three innovators, three leaders, three visionaries who continue to push the integrator community. And we're going to chat a little bit about what's going on in that community and what we're going to be talking about at the conference. So with that, I bid you a great Friday, good weekend, and I will see you next week. Be well.